The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Our aim is to explore the fringe, lost civilizations, alternative science, the paranormal, and much more. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live or future guests via email or the live chat room. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. And now welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
And I am your host, Soraya, as always. And we might have a few bugs to work out here, but I think we got everything. We are in a brand new studio, and I'm looking for my headphone levels. Huh. There we go. All right. Maybe that's better. Ooh, that's nice. Okay. Excellent. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? And this new studio will hopefully allow us to do some neat stuff, including some video, which we're going to start doing next week when we have in-studio guests. Like we did last week with Peter, but we couldn't do video. But this is a very nice studio with a lot of room, so we're going to be able to shoot video as well. Other updates on the show, we're also on Stitcher, and you can go to wheredidtheroadgo.com to subscribe to us on Stitcher, and there's also a player right on the page, so you can listen to all the shows at the click of a button. Let's see. Other than that, I think that's all the updates for the show. There's a couple interesting things posted on our Facebook page, if you want to check them out. There's an interesting bit on the old maps, and a guy who says he can prove that they are not of recent design. The funny thing is, in the article, he also says we should not to a lost civilization as an explanation. And it made me stop and go, well, why not? I mean, why would you exclude that as a possible explanation for these maps? But nonetheless, it's an interesting read. There's also an interesting article on some gigantic monoliths being found in, megaliths being found in Siberia. Well worth checking out, bigger than anything else that's ever been found. So, kind of neat there. Tonight, however, our guest is Steve Stockton, and he's written an interesting book. That's going to soon have a follow-up. Let's see if we can get him on here. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, Soraya.
All right. Excellent. That works nicely. Your name of your book is what?
Strange Things in the Woods.
Okay. That's what I thought it was. I didn't have it right here in front of me, and I didn't want to get it wrong. Mm-hmm. So how long ago did you write this?
Last year. Wrote it in the fall of last year. But it's been in the process for basically all of my life. It's a collection of stories that I heard growing up, and I've collected from friends and family throughout the last 3 to 4 decades.
Well, it's a very interesting read. It definitely is. What got you interested in this in the first place?
Well, first of all, I had my first paranormal experience when I was 6 years old. Saw a full body apparition. A child ran across the street in front of our house down into our yard. And if you notice small children, like, around 1 year old, they've barely mastered the art of walking. They'll start running, begin to run too fast, and then lose control and fall. This child that I observed run across the street into our yard, running too fast, fell, disappeared. I was about maybe 100 feet away from where it happened, went directly to the spot, didn't take my eyes off of it, nothing there. 6 years old, it didn't scare me, but I just thought, you know, that's really strange. That's not supposed to happen. And that just sort of fostered a lifelong interest in the paranormal.
Well,
and on my grandmother's side, they came out of the spiritualist movement of the early 20th century. So I was around that sort of thing. The seances, the fortune telling, table tapping, and the stories that were passed down. I grew up in the South, so there's a great oral tradition at night after it gets dark, and ghost tales, or in the Southern vernacular, boogers and haints. So a lot of stories that I heard growing up.
Huh. All right. And how did you go about collecting? Now, this book, although you've compiled it, you didn't really write it. You had other people, and you collected their stories, right?
Yes, sir. It's a retelling of stories, like I said, that I heard from family and friends. And when I first discovered the paranormal world, Frank Edwards was one of my favorite authors. And that's kind of the way he did. He didn't investigate so much as just report what he heard back. He told other people's stories the way they were told to him. His Strangest of All, Strange People, Strange World, books that were written before I was born, the late 50s, early 60s. I discovered them. And I thought, you know, there were no judgments being made. He just reported the stories as they were told to him, and that's what I attempted to do with this volume.
All right. And some of these people that you got the stories from specifically say they're like in their 90s at the time and such. Is that the case with a lot of them?
Yeah, a lot of them. I was a late in life, unexpected baby, so a lot of my parents' friends were elderly. And these were people, like I said, in their 80s and 90s, people that were sincere and sober and convinced that they had experienced something that was out of the ordinary.
Okay, and these are taken from what area?
Mainly in the South, East Tennessee in particular. There's ones from other parts of the country, but it's Tennessee-centric in this volume.
Okay, and this is available currently on Amazon. Is it just an ebook?
Yes. Currently, it's available exclusively on Amazon as an ebook. There's a print version, and other online e-tailers have versions coming soon.
Oh, okay, cool. Do you want to maybe cover a few of the stories in this book? Because it's not just like ghost stories or anything like that. You got everything from high strangeness to UFOs to Bigfoot to ghosts.
Yeah, there's a little bit of everything, and some that are even kind of humorous, just not necessarily paranormal or anything ghostly, but just weird, just plain weird.
Yeah. So you want to give us a few of your favorites to start this off?
One of my favorites is the opening story in the book, The Flying Orb, of my family members when they were in their early 20s, maybe, were down below the barn on the farm that they lived on and heard what sounded like an old-fashioned pipe organ coming up the hollow where they were at, heard it pass directly over them, out of sight, clear blue sky, summertime, sound of a pipe, no visible sighting of it, but just heard the organist playing. They could make out a tune, but or the notes of the tune, but not the actual tune that was being played. And that's actually two of my relatives that they both experienced it and refused to go to that part of the woods again.
I bet. It reminds me of, there's a movie called The Yellow Brick Road where music comes out of nowhere. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I am.
That's just exactly what it made me think of when I read that story. And that definitely qualifies as a high strangeness event, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Another one of my favorites in the book is Disintegrating People. That was a girl that I worked with back in the 80s. She was in a state park in Tennessee. Her and a friend had been to the lake and decided to hike through the park. Came through a clearing where there was two sets of clothing, one male, one female, laid out perfectly on the ground, like shirt, pants, jacket, socks still in the shoes, but no people. Just like they had laid down on the ground and simply disappeared. And that kind of ties in. I don't know if you're familiar with David Politis' work,
yes.
The Missing 411 series.
Yeah.
Very similar to some of the stuff he's uncovered in the state parks throughout the country.
Yeah, you specifically have a story in here that comes from the Smoky Mountains that mentions some of the cases that David Politis has worked on.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, particularly the missing cases from back in the 60s, the Dennis Martin case. I was about the same age as Dennis Martin when all that happened, and that's firmly impressed my mind. But yeah, I've visited the Smokies on several occasions and hiked and camped all through them, and there are just certain places that don't feel right. You wander a little ways off the trail, it's like you've entered another world or another dimension.
Do you with David Politis's work, the clothes one doesn't quite make me think of it, but at the same time it does. Because it only has that aspect. Like, someone could have been playing a joke for all anyone knows on that one. But the tale from the Smoky Mountains, I forget exactly what the story was. Do you remember which one that is?
That's Strangeness in the Smokies. And that was another friend of mine that had gone hiking and had specifically walked into an area and said that just there was a calmness, like almost too quiet. No birds, no animals. Couldn't even hear the wind rustling in the trees. And just felt like if they just sat down, wanted to sit down and go to sleep, but if they had done that, they probably would have never been heard from again, because that's happened on several occasions in the Smokies.
Yeah, why do you think that is? Why are the Smoky Mountains?
It's a really strange place. The Cherokee, considered a mystical spot. There's a certain power spot. I've heard discussions that there's possible energy vortex there.
It's and I've had that experience wandering through the woods where everything just goes dead quiet, and I've experienced that myself.
It's very unsettling. It's too quiet. It's like even the birds and the animals, and there's times when the trees are moving, but you can't even hear the wind, and it's almost like lulling you into a false sense of security.
Yeah. And for that to happen in the Smoky Mountains with all those disappearances definitely seems like it could be connected. I mean, we don't know since he didn't disappear, but if he did disappear, we wouldn't know the story. So, I mean, it's definitely a possibility that these people are experiencing something similar. I know Paulides had talked about people who had that exact experience where everything went quiet and they found themselves in unfamiliar places only to come back later and, you know, suddenly walk into an area they were more familiar with and have no idea where they had been.
Yeah, that's happens very often in the Smokies, where I've had that experience myself, where I know the area, like the hike up to Klingman's Dome. I wandered off the trail there before and go into an area that looks not even remotely like where I was at. It's almost like you walk through a portal or into another dimension that exists maybe on another timeline or something. And then when you come back out, you may be quite a ways from where you started originally, but it doesn't seem like you've covered that much distance, or maybe from another direction. I've had that happen, leave the trail on one side and then come back out of the trailhead and be on the other side.
One of the stories toward me in the middle of the book is called The Mysterious Ball, and that one really fascinated me.
Yeah, that was a friend of my father's that was coming home from school and had walked through the woods and thought it might be his brother who had gone out squirrel hunting earlier in the day. And it was just a striped ball, approximately 3 or 4 feet high, that seemed to have intelligence. It rolled up through some small scrub pine trees there, part of the trees, and it was like it saw this person when he was a child, and then just rolled backwards, and the trees parted back, and he couldn't see it anymore. Called out for his brother, heard nothing, got kind of spooked, went back to his house. His brother had already arrived and was eating dinner. He got so.
And it seems like too weird of a story to just make up.
Right. That's the thing about a lot of these. I mean, people that I grew up around and knew all my life, and like I said, they weren't telling stories to get attention. They were actually convinced in their minds of what they had seen and what they'd experienced.
Yeah. How is there any way you can really vet these stories? I mean, is it just instinct whether or not they're telling you the truth?
Yeah, that's kind of the beauty of it. I mean, you have to take it at face value, but that's the interesting part. For me, I've been part of paranormal investigation groups going as far back as the early 80s, but I'm much more of a legend tripper than I am an investigator. I like to visit the places and just take the stories for what they are as stories, and no attempt to vet or get any provenance for them, but just take the person at their word.
One of the stories, too, called The Piper, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, that's a Big Ridge State Park in Tennessee. That's a phenomenon that's been observed over many decades. I've heard that myself. The best time to hear it is in the late summer, early fall, and sit in your car in the parking lot by the old grist mill there and just crack the windows, and you can hear what sounds like somebody playing the scales on a flute or some other type of wind instrument. And so that's been going on for several decades, at least 7 or 8 decades. That's been experienced, and I've heard, you know, conjecture that maybe it's a hollow tree or some sort of terrestrial feature that the wind blows through, but I don't know that it would account for it happening over that amount of time.
Yeah, it seems like it would have worn down or something. I mean, unless it was a solid rock formation. Has anyone tried to track it down? Is it like just one of those ambient things you can't really tell where it's coming from?
Yeah, it's one of those things you can't really tell where it's coming from. You move in the direction you think it is, and then the next time you hear it, maybe it's behind you or off to one of your rear flanks. And there's other things that go on in that park, too. There's been sightings of a ghostly figure of a man with a long rifle, and also a large black dog that seems to come and go at will.
Now, the black dog, is this like a hellhound or something else?
It's just a ghostly apparition of a dog. Not necessarily a hellhound, but kind of along those same lines. And then I've got another story in my book that happened in Ohio about a black dog that where one of my cousins visiting some other cousins had gotten lost in a cornfield and had wandered off into the woods and was unable to find his way back to the family farm. Large said the largest black dog he'd ever seen came out of nowhere, led him out to the road, the highway, and he just had to pick a direction and walk. The dog seemed to be leading him. Eventually sees car headlights. It's his father and his uncle in a car. They take him in. He falls asleep the next morning. They ask him about his adventure. They've been looking for him for several hours. He talks about the dog that led him back to the farm, or at least to the road where they could find him. And neither one of the people that picked him up in the car saw the dog standing there with him, but said he knew the dog was real. It licked him on the hand. He actually patted it on the head and things.
Yeah, I really like that one, actually.
Yeah, that's another one of my favorites.
You want to tell a couple of the ghost stories you might have in there?
One of the strangest, I think, is probably the haunted cabin. That was a friend of my father's, an elderly gentleman. He was probably in his late 80s, early 90s when he told me that story. Probably in the late 70s, early 80s. He was an Irish immigrant that lived in the hills of East Tennessee. He was out hunting ginseng in a dry riverbed and came across the remains of a cabin where an entire family had perished several decades earlier due to his measles or smallpox or something like that. Middle of the daytime, hears a sound like furniture being dragged across the floor. Looks in, and this is a very rudimentary, hardcore Appalachia-style cabin. No windows or door. The roof's fallen in. Absolutely nothing in there. Looks in, doesn't see anything, walks away. Hears the noise again. Goes back, looks, there's nothing there. Starts to walk away. Hears the noise again. This time goes back. Hears a child whisper, "Daddy." And he said at that point, it's like, I knew they weren't talking to me because I didn't have any choke at the time. Turned away and left. And the gentleman's name was Otto. I'm like, "Otto, did that scare you?" And he's like, "Ah, I'm not scared of anything. The only thing that scares me is maybe a snake. And if I've got a stick, I'm not even afraid of a snake." Just really interesting character, but said sober as a judge and absolutely convinced in what he'd heard and didn't seem, upset or bothered by it. It just was strange and relating the story as it happened to him.
Right, right. You have some about some Native American spirits in there too, a few of them actually.
Yeah, the East Tennessee, that general area, East Tennessee, North Carolina, Cherokee lived and hunted in that area. Native American spirits, that's another story from Fentress County, Tennessee. A relative had gone over to the family farm for Thanksgiving and had gone down under one of the bluffs where arrowheads and bones and things were found very often, and heard what he thought was people talking and assumed some of his other cousins had arrived since his family was the first to arrive. Back up on top of the bluff, no one there. Goes back down, hears the voices again, they're getting closer. And he said, well, maybe they're coming down the other side because there's two ways to get to the bluff. Goes back up, hears the voices again, sounds like they're coming from below him. Goes back down, they're even clearer this time, and he realizes that what's being spoken isn't English. He just got a really strange feeling that he was somewhere where he didn't need to be. And that's another thing that's prevalent with some of these areas that are sacred to the Native Americans. It's you get a feeling like you're not supposed to be there.
Mm. Yeah, there was another one that was talking about someone taking a pile of dirt.
Yeah, he was hauling topsoil to put on the garden and had stopped at a place that was easier to get it from, and it turns out it was a burial mound that he was digging the dirt out of, even though his father told him to never touch it. He was young, didn't realize what it was, but it was an Indian burial ground, and he was digging in the dirt there to take and put on the garden. And said that he heard what sounded like a flock of geese surrounding him, and it got louder and louder. And I tailed it out of there and never went back to that area and didn't have any problem with the invisible geese.
And that's just so strange. Such a strange thing to hear.
Mm-hmm. Really, that guy was upset. I mean, he was even retelling the story. He was still shaken after, many, many years that had happened. It made an impression on him.
Hmm. You have not a whole lot, but you have at least one UFO story in there.
Yeah, the one UFO story, there will be more in the subsequent volume that's coming up. But the one UFO story I have, that was another family friend that had got word that his father was in the final stages of life. And he had gone over to try to get there and visit with him before he passed away. And on the way over, saw This is also in Fentress County. Saw a classic cigar-shaped UFO flying real low, just over tree level. And then when he arrived at the home place, found out that his father had passed away about the time that he'd experienced the sighting. And that's another thing about the South. A lot of times, they're very superstitious people. A lot of them were immigrants from Ireland and Scotland that had settled in that area because it reminded them so much of their homeland. But a lot of times when they observed anything strange or had any weird experience, they would consider it some sort of omen or a portent or a foretelling of events to come. So some of these events are surrounding deaths. There's another story in there called The Floating Coffin, where two young girls observed a coffin floating on the ground, above the ground, moving on of its own accord, coming up an abandoned railroad spur. And then a couple of days later, the widow lady that lived the next couple hills over passed away, and they always thought that that was a foretelling of her death.
Hmm. Yeah, that's always strange when you get something like that. You actually had two coffin stories, but the first one, the guy kind of debunked his own story.
Yeah, the light in the coffin, that's a really funny one. That's another favorite. It was a friend of my father's. Heard him tell that story many times. But, yeah, he was coming home from his girlfriend's house, cut through the woods, and saw what he thought was a light in a coffin, and it scared him. He thought it was a sign that he was going to die. Got home absolutely shaken, crying, told his father what went on. His father insisted that they go back out and take a look. And it was a lightning bug caught in a spider web in a hollow log. So, and he swore up and down that if, you know, he hadn't gone back and checked that out, he probably would have passed away that night from fright, just from thinking that, you know, my time's come, I've seen the omen, I'm out of here.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
So that's one of the funnier ones in the book.
One of the really weird ones has to do with the Pine Barrens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a friend that I worked with that had gone to visit a friend in New Jersey. He had always wanted to see the Pine Barrens, you know, home of the Jersey Devil and lots of other unexplained activity in that region, Shades of Death Road and whatnot. They were hiking in the Pine Barrens and came across a pizza, not in a box or anything, but just sitting on the ground. A pepperoni and cheese pizza looked fresh, obviously hadn't been there very long. No sign of anyone or any reason for it to be in the middle of the Pine Barrens, but they left it alone. They decided amongst themselves that there wasn't enough money in existence to get them to eat a slice.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, especially, I don't know, that's just one of those things, like, that's because in the Pine Barrens, you can see a pretty good distance around you, can't you?
Yeah, somewhat. I've been through that area myself. There are places where you can see, but so they don't call it the Barrens for nothing. It's pretty barren, but the pine growth there are thickets and things like that. It's harder to see, but it's not really overgrown to the point that you couldn't see someone, you know, coming in with a pizza and laying it down on the ground close to where you were and then sneaking away. But there were no sight of anyone else where they were at in the Pine Barrens.
Yeah, and why would anyone do that anyway? And how would they know someone would find it?
Yeah, that's the strangest thing. It's just, not only was it there, why was it there? Why would somebody bring a fresh pizza out into the middle of the woods and just leave it there? How did they transport it there? There's no box, nothing, you know, no campsite. It was just on the ground.
Wow. Yeah, you want to give us a couple of the monster stories from the book?
There's a couple of Bigfoot stories, one about Bigfoot in Fentress County. A guy on a neighboring farm had was cutting some logs, cutting up some firewood, and it chopped his leg pretty good. And they had to call an ambulance for him. And the guy on the farm next to him, when the ambulance came down the gravel road there with the siren going, they heard some sort of creature answering back with a similar wail. If you've ever heard any of the recordings of the purported Bigfoot howls and yips, he said that was exactly what it sounded like. He heard those much later on in a documentary and said, that's exactly what I heard. Like when the ambulance started, he heard a call coming back from further back in the woods. That's on the border of Big South Fork National Park.
And that had to be so creepy.
And then there's another Bigfoot story that happened in East Tennessee near Knoxville. A couple of guys that were out hunting for a raccoon or opossum, I think, near the lake there in Solway, encountered a 8 to 10 foot creature that came up over the riverbank, and that one spooked the dogs. And these were hunting dogs that were used to, you know, wild animals and had been bitten on their ears and snouts and whatnot. And whatever it was came up over the bank, scared the dogs so bad they were literally had their tails between themselves trying to go back to the truck and even wetting themselves. And the person that was relating the story to me, one of the guys that it happened to, said there was a smell too, just this incredible smell of like rotting garbage, which if you're familiar with Bigfoot, that's classic. Also with the skunk ape in Florida, the smell is one of the telling factors in that.
And I think that one with the Bigfoot siren like sound and the Piper one, both have sort of a Lovecraftian sort of element to them in that respect, like because it's a weird sound, especially the Piper one.
Not expecting to hear in the woods, the Phantom Piper. That's just creepy in any regard. I mean, even if it were someone, a human, out in the woods playing a pipe, that would still be unsettling, depending on the time of day and where you're at.
And has anyone recorded that sound?
Not that I'm aware of in this particular case. I mean, I've heard recordings of it in other documentaries and things that I've watched, but I've heard other reports of Bigfoot in Fentress County, similar sightings and tufts of hair and things found on barbed wire fences. So I've got some more Bigfoot stories coming up in the next volume.
Okay. Tell people again where they can get this volume.
Currently, it's available exclusively on Amazon.com as an ebook worldwide, and it'll be coming out in paperback fairly soon, probably another month or so, and then it'll also be available through other e-tailers for Nook and other e-reader tablets coming up soon.
Did you publish this yourself?
Yes, sir. Self-published through Lucky Secret Press, Bangor, Maine, which is an indie publishing house that I work with.
Okay. And when is the second volume coming? Are you working on that now?
Currently working on that now, as well as a volume of my own personal experiences, which I initially was going to put them in these books that I'm working on, but found that I had enough to cover an entire volume of just things that I've experienced. So probably summer on volume two of Strange Things in the Woods, and then my own personal stories. Working title is Growing Up Weird. That one's going to come out probably in fall of this year.
Okay. All right. We got to take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about your personal experiences.
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live guests via email or the live chat room. You can also check out our upcoming schedule, blog, link section, book reviews, videos, and links to our Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and much more. That's wheredidtheroadgo.com.
And tonight, we've been talking with Steve Stockton about his recent book, Strange Things in the Woods. I got that right? Strange Things in the Woods?
Yes, sir.
All right. And now you got into this. You told us about your first experience seeing a little child just kind of disappear in front of you. What other type of experiences have you had? Have you had them all your life?
Basically all my life. I enjoyed playing in the woods. And while a lot of my family were outdoorsmen and hunters, I preferred to do my hunting with a camera. I just didn't have the heart to kill animals. So basically grown up in the woods and experienced a lot of different things myself. Had encounters with what I believe to be a Bigfoot, where I've heard the tree knockings, and had the stone throwing experiences where I've had rocks thrown at me from several different directions while out in the middle of a national park or a national forest.
And that always reminds me of poltergeist phenomena too. We just, similar phenomena.
It's a strange feeling and the yips,
Well, you broke up. What was that?
I heard the yips and the yowls, had the heard the tree knockings, the rocks, small stones being thrown from nowhere. Never been hit, but very close. It was almost like they knew where I was and were throwing them at me with the intention of not hitting me, but just to let me know that I was under observation.
Were you able to ever see one?
No, I've never had a sighting. I've heard and had the smell, too. The smell is almost overpowering. It's one of those smells like I've heard people in law enforcement and EMTs talk about the smell of a corpse. It's similar to that, but it's more of a rotting garbage smell. But it's very particular type smell, almost a musky odor. And it's one of those things when you smell it, you know, I've never smelled anything like this before, and there's not really anything to compare it to.
Did you ever try to communicate when you heard the knocks or anything?
I've knocked back on the trees, but I don't know that I was knocking in the right cadence or whatever. Didn't really get an answer, but would hear other knocks. They seem to be talking with one another and just ignoring what I was doing.
Do you think these are physical animals, or do you think they're a manifestation of something else?
I'm kind of torn on that one, because I think they are a physical being, but there's a metaphysical aspect to them as well. It's very prevalent in areas where there's a lot of UFO activity, to also have a lot of Bigfoot sightings, or Yeti, Sasquatch, Skunk Ape, kind of different names for the same creature. And that's another thing that kind of convinces me of that there is something out there, because it goes across all cultures in all nations. I've traveled extensively, been to Europe and Southeast Asia, and they're similar stories, you know, differently named, but the same type creature, literally across all cultures and continents.
Yeah, and that, of course, raises even more the bigger question of why have we never found a corpse or any trace of them, really, that's definitive.
Yeah, that's the metaphysical aspect of it, is where do they go? Where do they come from? Is there, you know, like the fabled elephant graveyard, is there a Sasquatch graveyard somewhere? Is there an area deep within the mountains or hills somewhere where there's piles of Sasquatch bones?
Mm. Yeah, or underground somewhere, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Caves, it could be anywhere. And I remember comedian Mitch Hedberg even said that the reason all the pictures of Bigfoot is blurry is that the creature itself is actually blurry. He was making a joke, but I've actually heard that put forth as a theory, that it's transdimensional, vibrates at a different frequency, and that's why it's so hard to see.
Yeah. Plus, you know, when you encounter something like that, it's gonna fray your nerves right off the bat, even if you're hunting it. So what other experiences have you had in the woods?
I've got a story in my book about the Brown Mountain Lights in North Carolina, and that was told by someone else, but I've experienced those myself on several occasions when I lived in East Tennessee. I'm out on the West Coast now in Portland, Oregon, but when I lived in that part of East Tennessee, that was a very often trip on the weekends, would go over into Brown Mountain, and that was the most unusual phenomena I've ever witnessed on a repeated basis. It looks almost like a fluorescent light. It moves among the trees faster than anyone could run. The first time I saw it, I thought, yeah, it's like, looks like somebody with a fluorescent lantern. And I'd camped out on the ridge above Limbel Gorge, spent the night, watched the lights all night. And then the next morning, because I arrived there after dark, the next morning, looking at the gorge, the area where I observed the light, it's almost sheer cliffs. There's not any way anything human could move around in that area, especially that speed and just the sheerness and ruggedness of the terrain there.
So do you think it's some kind of earth light or some kind of spirit or something else?
Well, there's legends that it's braves that were sent on a quest that never ends. And then there have been scientific studies involving geomagnetism, piezoelectricity, things like that, maybe some sort of disturbance in the magnetic fields of the earth that causes those. But it's very interesting phenomenon. It's not only in the tree line, it's above the tree line and up above the mountain there too. And different colors, they'll pulse out, they'll grow brighter, they'll change colors, they'll zoom in and out. Like I said, the times that I've been there, it was, especially in the summertime, it was visible essentially all night long.
So they're not actually hard to find. It's kind of like the Marfa lights.
Yeah, it's, I've probably been there over a dozen times, and each time had at least some experience. It seemed to be more so when it was raining or kind of misty. They were more prevalent, but I've never made a trip to Brown Mountain that I didn't observe the lights at least for a few minutes, but most likely it would run for on and off for all night long until dawn.
That's freaky. And, of course, you can't get close to them, can you?
No. Of course, I was on the other side of the gorge a couple miles away, but I've talked with people that have been on the side where they're sighted in the trees there, and Yeah, you can't get close. You'll see it at a distance, move to where you think it is or the direction where you think it's going to be, and then it'll turn up behind you, almost like the Bigfoot yelps and yowls. It like knows where you are and makes sure you can't get close. You move in one direction, and then it shows up somewhere else.
All right. Is any other experiences in the woods?
I've had just a feeling of being followed. That's that happens a lot in this book.
You dropped out at the end there. This happens what?
I've had that happen in the Smokies. It's a feeling of being followed, like when you're the only one around and in the deep woods. Just a feeling that there are eyes on you or maybe something pacing you, tracking along with you. Mm. I've experienced that lots of times in the deep woods. Never seen anything, but occasionally hear what sounds. And if you spend a lot of time in the woods, you can tell if something's bipedal or quadruped. And it sounds like something on two legs keeping pace with you. You know, you stop and it stops, you continue, and then you hear it start back up. That's a very unsettling feeling. Yeah. When you're by yourself in deep mountainous territory.
I used to have that happen to me for a while. Anytime I was outside by myself, it didn't have to be in the woods, but everything would go dead quiet. And I could hear something following me, but there was nothing there, but it was just the creepiest feeling. And I would be with people and everything would be normal. I'd say, go into the house, they'd leave, I'd walk back out and everything would be dead quiet. And I was just like, what is going on?
Yeah, I've had it happen in the woods and out. And had another really interesting experience as a teenager. This wasn't in the woods, but it was just another creepy encounter. I was on a country road, East Knox County, just basically out driving around in my car, and observed in my rearview mirror that there was a guy behind me on a motorcycle with no headlights on. Hmm. So I knew the road that I was on, knew there was a stop sign coming up, and this guy was right on my bumper. So I'm thinking, okay, he's got an electrical problem. He's staying with me so that he can be seen. So I thought, okay, I'll stop at the stop sign, get out and let him know. I'll find out where he's going so I can drive in front of him. Stop at the stop sign, get out of my car. There's no motorcycle. Nowhere could have gone. This was a two-lane country road, heavily wooded on either side, just not there. I get in, start driving, keep looking in my rearview mirror. About the third time I look back, the guy's there again on the motorcycle, no headlights on. And that one kind of spooked me. I tried to basically run off and leave him, but he stayed right with me. And then when I got back into a well-lighted area, he was gone again. Never experienced that afterwards, although I drove through that area several times hoping to experience it again. But I did do some research on that one and found out that there was a person killed on a motorcycle there just a few years prior. So, again, it's one of those things is, what did I experience? Was it a phantom motorcyclist, or was it just somebody messing with me, or who knows?
Yeah, or something affecting, creating a hallucination as you drive through that area, something affecting your brain.
Yeah, or maybe like a residual type haunting, you know?
Yeah.
Or it's a recording of that thing played over and over.
And I take it you're the kind of person who will go after this stuff rather than run away from it.
Yeah, I don't have any fear. And like I said, that dates back to the first encounter that I had as a child. It didn't frighten me. I just thought, you know, that's really strange. That's not supposed to happen. And that just always had that sense of wonder and that natural curiosity about things that are unusual. And so there's been times when I've gotten spooked and had the goosebumps or the hair stand up on the back of my neck. But yeah, I'm the type that if I hear a strange noise or see something weird, I'll go toward it instead of away from it.
Yeah, I'm like that as well. You might as well. I mean, let's find out what it is. You may not get that opportunity again.
Yeah, I would love to have a one-on-one encounter with a Bigfoot or an alien or any other type of apparition or anything that I haven't encountered. But yeah, other than the one full-body apparition, that's mainly the majority of my ghostly encounters as far as visual contact. Heard things, smelled things, witnessed things move when there was nothing there to move them. But that was the first and best was the child that disappeared.
And how old were you at that time?
6 years old.
Hmm. What? Now, did you live in a haunted house at one point?
Several different times, actually.
Really?
Probably the most active one I was in was I lived in Las Vegas for about 5 years. And I lived in a house out on the edge of town, a couple miles from downtown Las Vegas, not the strip, but the actual downtown Fremont Street. House had been built in the 1930s. And in 1930s, Las Vegas, the only casinos and things that existed were downtown. So at this point, it would have been in the middle of absolutely nowhere, just in the middle of the desert when it was built. And I rented the downstairs of the house, and there was a bookcase built into the wall at the bottom of the stairs that opened into a secret room.
Really?
So there were stories, yeah, that it had been either some sort of like a mob safe house, or even one of the neighbors said he thought there had been some cult activity there. One of the rooms in the basement was built almost like a vestibule and had a window that went from one room into that room inside the house. And a lot of encounters there. Once I was taking a shower, I was the only one home. My roommate was out for the week, and it sounded like someone dragging a garbage can across the kitchen floor. Got out, checked, nothing there. Heard that on several occasions. Another time I had some friends over. I was involved in photography. At that time I was doing a photo shoot, and we were in one of the middle rooms in the basement and saw what I thought was one of the other people dash up the stairs. I actually heard them go up the stairs, and the person I thought it was stuck his head around the door into the room where I was at and said, "Did one of you guys just run up the stairs?" And we were all accounted for, all downstairs, but we had all just seen the flash of somebody go by and heard footsteps on the stairs.
Wow. This wasn't the same place that like Ghost Adventures investigated out there, is it?
No.
Okay.
Familiar with that one. One I would like to see him investigate. When I was involved in photography, I was a photo lab manager at Bally's Casino for the in-house photo lab. And where Bally's is now, that was the site of the original MGM that burned back in the 80s, and resulting in several deaths. And in the older part of the casino that hadn't been retrofitted was where the photo lab was. And experienced a lot of different things there. There was a closet that wouldn't stay closed, electrical panel that, the kind with a latch that you had to latch shut. I would latch it shut and then find it open when I was the only one in the lab. On another occasion, I had gotten to the lab early and saw somebody in one of the back rooms where the chemical tanks were, walked back there to see who it was. There was nobody there. Another time, me and two of my lab techs were sitting in the main room and saw a black, sort of a misty shadow type shape. Mm-hmm. Not exactly a shadow person because it didn't have a form. It was just more of a cloud pass across the room and go into the wall. I wasn't going to say anything. And these two kids looked at each other and they're like, "Did you see that?" And they actually left the lab, went down to the employee dining room, and I had to go and coax them back up to finish their shift.
Wow. So this stuff kind of follows you around.
Yeah. I don't know if it so much follows me or if I'm just more open or receptive to it. That's why I wasn't going to mention it when I saw it, because I'm kind of used to observing things like that. But when I got the confirmation from them without me having saying anything, I'm like, yeah, okay. And I had another guy come by one night that had been lab manager there before until he was promoted up the food chain. And he'd walked in the back room and came back out. And he's like, "When I used to be the lab manager here, I never liked this place. That back room was always weird. I couldn't keep the lights off." And I hadn't said a word to the guy, but he was relating exactly the same experiences that I'd had while I was lab manager there.
Wow. But that is the question. Is it that you're more open to it, or do you draw it in? Did you have more experiences when you lived in Tennessee than anywhere else, or has it been pretty much spread out?
It's pretty much spread out everywhere. I haven't had a lot of experiences here in Oregon yet, but I haven't been here that long, so I'm kind of looking around, seeing where to go and what to get into. But yeah, lots of experiences in Tennessee. House I lived in when my daughter was small was very active. We would occasionally hear a crash. Had a sliding glass door. You're in the back of the house, it would sound like maybe the sliding glass door came out of the tracks and crashed and shattered in the kitchen. Go in and look, absolutely nothing to be found. Another time, sounded like someone folding and unfolding a plastic grocery bag in the shower. Nothing there. Had a really creepy basement. Would occasionally hear footsteps coming up the basement. First time that happened, I was sitting in the dining room working on something on the computer. and heard very clear footsteps coming up the stairs. I grabbed a metal pipe that I used to block the sliding glass door, flung the door open, wooden stairs that went downstairs, absolutely nothing there, and no other way to get in or out besides that door.
Wow. So, yeah, you've had enough to fill a book, I guess, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And then some. I may actually have to do two volumes of my own experiences.
Wow. What do you think the strangest thing you ever had happen to you is?
I would still have to point back to the encounter as a child. Like, yeah. I said, just looking back on that, seeing that full body apparition disappear right in front of my eyes, that was definitely one of the strangest, or probably the strangest.
Now, when you were a kid, did you think that was weird, or did you not know that was something that shouldn't happen?
I knew that it was something that shouldn't happen, and it struck me as weird, but it was like that was cool, you know. I want to see that again. So it didn't scare me.
And you also have a story in this book about some footsteps, kids' footsteps found in the snow.
Yeah, and actually that kind of ties in. That was only about a half a mile away from where I had the full body apparition. But
really?
Be 5 or 6 years later, another friend of mine had snowed a few inches overnight. He was out walking through the woods and came across a clearing where, just out of nowhere, barefoot footprints of a small child started, continued across the clearing, and then just disappeared. There was nowhere anyone could have gone to without leaving footprints, since it was fresh snow. And it was about a half a mile from where I had that first encounter. So I think maybe those kind of tie in together, that there was some sort of spirit activity there. Never got the full story. Didn't really investigate too much into it. Didn't want to know too much on that one since I lived there, but it was fun to experience.
Well, I would think you would want to know more if you lived there.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where sometimes it's better not to know. That kind of the fun is in the not knowing, in a way, you know, just to speculate and let the imagination run wild.
So what's going to come out next? The book about your experiences, or the second part of the?
The second part is nearing completion. I had really good response to the first edition. I don't want to say overwhelming, because that sounds kind of negative, but I've gotten lots and lots of emails from people literally throughout the world with their own stories to tell about things they've encountered specifically in the woods. So This one, much like the first one, is kind of writing itself. It's really, really interesting stories. Got a story in my book, The Grinning Man, and at the time that was told to me, I'd never heard of that phenomenon, but apparently that's been experienced not only here, but in other countries. I've heard from someone in the Philippines that had experience with the Grinning Man, and apparently that's kind of like the shadow people. That's a well-known phenomenon that I wasn't aware of until recently, and I'd already heard that story a long time ago. So
you want to tell people that one?
Yeah, that one, the Grinning Man, when he's encountered, it'll be a stranger. Usually it's not necessarily in the woods, although my story was, and I've heard other story in the woods, come across a person. He's usually dressed in black or dark clothing, wears a hat, and just stands and grins, doesn't blink, doesn't speak, makes no movement, but just is observed standing and grinning almost maniacally. And the person in my book, it totally creeped them out, went in and got their grandfather. This was on a farm in near Chattanooga. And grandfather went back out with a shotgun to try and find the guy, because there wasn't supposed to be anybody around, and he didn't want him bothering his grandkid anyway. No sign of anyone.
The John Keel covered some of those. More recently, David Weatherly talked about a bunch of those in his latest book.
Yeah, I was on Jim Harrell's show, and he mentioned David Weatherly covering the Grinning Man. But other than my story, I wasn't aware of it until after I'd published it, and then found other accounts of it. So that's really interesting. Kind of ties in with the shadow people phenomenon and black-eyed kids. One of the first documented black-eyed kid sightings was in the 90s here in Portland. So I'm kind of looking into that one, asking around, seeing what I can find out about that.
Yeah, well, Weatherly has gotten all that stuff in the latest book. The shadow people thing, I mean, I've had a lot of experiences with that, and that's always an unusual thing. But a lot of people, to me, it was never a negative thing. To a lot of people, it seems to be a very negative experience. But I don't know what the stories have been that you've heard.
I've had both, and I've experienced those myself. The house that I was living in Tennessee, where I heard the footsteps on the stairs, I would experience shadows like walking along beside me in the hallway, just catch it out of the corner of my eye, turn and there's nothing there. But I've heard of ones that were benevolent, almost friendly and inviting, and then had other reports of stories where there were very malevolent beings that gave off very negative, almost demonic energy. So, and I guess it just depends on who you talk to and what their experience was. But then that could also tie into the personal energies of the person themselves and how they perceive it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a big aspect to it, is how you perceive it and what you do with it. Because even though my experiences weren't always positive with them, the effects of the experiences were positive. And in that case, was the experience actually positive in the first place?
Right, right. So it's all in your own personal perspective. I think it's kind of like, I've talked to other people who, when I was collecting these stories when I was younger, that, you know, I've spent my life in the woods. I've never seen anything out of the ordinary. And I think it was Einstein that said, some people never see miracles and some people see them every day. So a lot of it's in your perspective and what you're looking for. And I think if you go out with an open mind and expect the unexpected, then you're more likely to encounter it than somebody that just blocks it out and has already decided that it doesn't exist. And even if they see something, they're going to convince themselves that they didn't, I think.
Well, that's true, too. But I also think there might be something just biologically to some people that they don't pick up on certain things that other people do. It might be a, you know, just like certain people can't see colors. You're colorblind. Well, you're supernatural blind, you know?
Absolutely. I've heard that theory put forth that, and it seems that the younger you are, the more open you are to things like that. And then even people that experience a lot of things younger, the older they grow, the less they experience, unless they hone that ability and focus on opening themselves up to it.
Yeah, well, I think we learn what reality's supposed to be, and some of us can block stuff out and others can't, too, might be part of the answer. Because kids can see all kinds of stuff. So can animals, because they don't know to block it out.
Right. But, and that was like with my first experience. You know, I saw it. It didn't scare me. I knew it wasn't supposed to happen, but it happened. You know, I know what I saw. I know I wasn't hallucinating. But, you know, there would be nothing you could say or do that would convince me that I didn't see that. That would be like putting your hand on a hot stove eye and somebody telling you, no, it's not hot. You didn't burn yourself. I mean, that's how convincing it was.
Right, right. And the thing is, most people who tell these stories, they're not getting any money from them. They're not getting famous from them, usually. And they're not stories that they necessarily want to tell because they're afraid of ridicule. So when skeptics well, they're just making it up, why would they make it up? There's no good reason to make it up. There's nothing they're getting out of it.
Absolutely. Like, you know, you have the Bigfoot hoaxers and things like that. But these people, they were very reticent to talk. Some of them, it would take a while to kind of draw it out of them. And it was that fear of ridicule, that fear of, you know, being told you're crazy or no, you didn't see that. And like, these people were sober and honest and would have no personal gain in telling some wild tale. You know, and like I said, a lot of times it had to be almost dragged out of them with a log chain. You know, you had to really get in there and dig and work at them. And then finally they'd loosen up and start talking. And then when they saw you were interested and that you weren't skeptical and, you know, that's a bunch of baloney or whatever, when you were open to it, then they would open up more and more freely talk about it.
And you have people like Whitley Strieber, who people were like, well, he just did it for the money. Well, the guy was already selling, you know, enormous amounts of books. If anything, he hurt his career by writing Communion. And then he became known as the anal probe guy.
Yeah. So it hurts credibility in some ways. But again, I've met Whitley before, and he's the most genuine, just well-spoken person. And you get that impression that he truly believes in what he says. What, no matter how wild or outlandish it sounds, that's, in his personal experience, that's exactly what he saw and experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to give us a couple stories that are going to be in the upcoming book? Close the things off here?
Let me try to think of one that would be a good one to close out. There's one about a feather. And this one is kind of a touching one. A friend of mine, when they were small, they would, always happen around the holidays. And usually after the Christmas tree and things like that be put up, they would observe a small white feather floating through their house. This went on for several years throughout their childhood. And it would always be just out of their grasp. They would talked about chasing it, climbing up on the back of the couch, trying to get it. It would just stay out of reach. And then years later, when he was an adult, he related it to his mother. And his mother kind of shocked and in disbelief and said that your grandfather said that when he passed away, he was going to come back as a feather and float through the house and keep an eye on all of us. And the kid had no foreknowledge of this and didn't tell anybody about it. He was just a kid running around and would see a feather floating just out of his reach, trying to catch it. And then much later in adulthood, found out that that was basically something his grandfather had jokingly said, that I'm going to come back as a feather after I pass on so that I can keep an eye on everybody and find out that everyone's okay.
Wow.
So stories like that, that's awesome. So where the kid had no knowledge of it and then learn in adulthood that there was something connected to that in a familial sense from what he had experienced as a child.
Wow. All right. Do you know, have any idea when that's going to be out?
Should be out later this summer. Like I said, I'm still working on it, still getting lots of stories in. And if any of your listeners would like to contribute, you can reach me, stevestockton81@gmail.com. Or I'm on Twitter. At symbol strange and odd is my Twitter. I'm there. I'm very active. Like to tweet out things, all things paranormal. Got lots of followers. Have lots of fun on there. Don't have a website yet. That's in the works. But for now, the email address is the best way to get in touch with me.
You have a Facebook page for the book or anything?
Not yet. My daughter's setting that up for me. I'm a little older. I turned 50 last year, so Facebook and some of those things are kind of alien to me. I'm just learning the ins and outs of social networking.
Okay. All right. And people can find your book on Amazon, and it's only, what, $2.99?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
So it's how many stories are in it? Do you remember?
45 stories in this one.
Okay, and it's I have to say it's a very fun read. It's very enjoyable, and you did a great job with it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Is this your first book?
Of this sort, I've written middle grade fiction under another name, but I like to keep the two separate just for personal reasons, but this is the first nonfiction paranormal style book that I've written, and said it was one that was basically a lifetime in the writing. I'd collected these stories since childhood, basically, and finally got around to the point of putting them in the book. And that's why I like hearing stories from other people, because a lot of these stories, if they're not recorded, they die with the person that it happened to. That I said, so a lot of these people that I heard these stories from have since passed on, and they can live on now in my book. I've created a nice legacy there. And like I said, it's a fun read. Most of the stories are short enough that if you just need a break and read one or two, that's great. Or you can sit down and read the whole book start to finish. It's the way it's broken down like that. I did that intentionally. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the vernacular and the hillbilly language in there just to give it another air of authenticity. Told it the way that it was told to me, mistakes and all.
And the name of the book again is what?
Strange Things in the Woods.
All right. Thank you so much, Steve. And maybe when the second volume comes out, or when do you know when your personal stuff is coming out?
That one, I'd like to have that out in fall of this year.
Nice. Okay. Well, we'll have you back.
Okay. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, and I look forward to coming back.
All right. And for those of you listening live, The Last Exit for the Lost is up next. And here's some Psyche Corporation appropriately with Nightmares to Take You Out.
Shut the closet door. It's under the floor. The monster's there. The day I was born, you promised me hellfire. You were so sure I grew up waiting for demons to find me. I grew up hungry for ghosts to define me. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. Suffering, offering doom, 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 doom. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chew me, slake me, thrill me. I don't want the unicorn, I want the the bloodsucker, modify the uniform, cause I'm a monster. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chill me, slake me, thrill me. This is a sound I've heard before. It's like a voice asking for more. Ma chère éclate à cause des ailes. On from Sector to Primavera. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. No ammunition, give me an Armageddon. Give me the daring to forfeit ordinary dreams for the cost of pleasing humans far too steep. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. No ammunition, give me an Armageddon. Shut the closet door, it's under the floor.